Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, November 23rd. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Murray again voted to lead MISD board. Next 2 years likely to bring critical issues in front of school district's board. By Stuart Doreen. Brian Murray will again be president of the Midland ISD school board. Murray's fellow board members unanimously approved that the District 7 representative lead the board through what could be 2 very critical years for the school district. During the next 24 months, the Midland ISD School Board must select a new superintendent to replace Angelica Ramsey, address facilities, a presentation was made Monday by a facilities committee, and address what has been called the fiscal cliff, as MISD officials have previously stated that the district is looking at a deficit of more than $56 million in 2024-25. That deficit will take place if Midland ISD loses transition grant funding, as expected, that was put into place after the implementation of House Bill 3 from the 2019 legislative session. So the next board not only faces the responsibility of picking a new executive leader to continue progress made academically, but the board could call possibly 2 tax elections in that period. A tall task for a district with one of the lowest tax rates in the state, and a politically conservative electorate. I think it is an important 2 years, Murray said after Monday's meeting. It is an honor to be representing this board as the president, but we do have a lot going on. Murray will be president for a second 2-year term. Tommy Bishop, the dean of all board members, will be the vice president, and Katie Joyner will again be the board secretary. This article is entitled Thanksgiving Feast. Real Church Midland Meal Drive provides meals for local families. By Ben Schaffer. Real Church Midland held a turkey and Thanksgiving meal drive on Sunday for area families. The event was held at Real Church's headquarters, 401 West Industrial Avenue. Real Church Midland officials organized a car line where families could drive through and pick up a Thanksgiving turkey with green beans, corn, gravy, and mashed potatoes. Church members handed out 175 meals. Although the church caters to the spiritual needs of Midlanders, lead pastor Carlos Rodriguez said it's important for them to assist in improving the physical well-being of others. The scripture's so clear that we need to be meeting people's physical needs as well, he said. I wanted our community to see our hearts through our hands. Rodriguez added the church doesn't need to just pray for people, but can also be an answer to their prayer. Rodriguez added that an event like this had been on his mind since Real Church Midland began, but he considered walking away from the idea until he met with local church leaders. I had lunch with another pastor, just connecting with him, getting to know him over at Faith Church, and he said they were doing it, and it just kind of built some faith in me, and I said, you know what, we need to do it, he remarked. Real Church Midland promoted the event on social media and through word of mouth. Real Church Midland can be found online at realchurchmidland.com and facebook.com/realchurchmidland. This article is entitled Statewide Gasoline Average Falls Below $3 by Ben Schaffer. The statewide gas average fell below $3 for the first time since January, AAA Texas reported Tuesday. Although the state average has decreased and all 27 of the largest metropolitan areas that AAA surveys experienced price decreases, drivers in Midland are paying the highest prices in the state for the second straight week, $3.19. The 6-cent weekly drop in Midland was the smallest in the state, and less than half of the weekly decline reported across the state, 13 cents, according to AAA Texas. The state average dropped to $2.97, 18 cents less than the average in Midland. AAA Texas reported that market analysts attribute falling gas prices to decreasing oil prices. With West Texas Intermediate crude currently near or below $80 a barrel for the first time since the beginning of the year. The five cities with the highest gas prices are still mainly West Texas cities. Midland, Odessa, $3.14, Wichita Falls, $3.11, El Paso, $3.10, and College Station Bryan, $3.07. Regionally, Abilene's prices decreased 18 cents to $3.02. Amarillo's decreased 19 cents to $2.99. Lubbock's prices fell 13 cents to $2.98. San Angelo's prices fell 12 cents to $3.01. Midland's average is still 7 cents higher than 1 year ago. The average in Midland also has dropped $1.33 since June 11th, when a record high average was set. This article is entitled, New Raising Cane's Location Opens November 30th, by Morgan Taylor Thomas. The long-anticipated wait for a second Raising Cane's location comes to an end November 30th. Sitting across from the Midland Park Mall, the fried chicken joint can be found at 3314 West Loop 250 and will run 10 a.m. to 1 a.m. 7 days a week. To celebrate the grand opening, the new restaurant has a few tricks up its sleeve. First, guests 13 and older can enter their names in a drawing from 7:30 a.m. to 8:30 a.m. to possibly be picked for the Lucky 20 drawing and receive free canes for a year. Next, a ribbon-cutting ceremony will take place at 9 a.m., followed by an on-site remote broadcast by radio station KZBT's DJ Leo Caro from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. The winners of the Lucky 20 drawing will be announced after a ribbon-cutting. Furthermore, Freddie the Falcon from UTPB and Rocky from the Midland Rockhounds will be available for pictures throughout the event. To wrap up week one, Lone Star Sanctuary for Animals will crash the pit stop on December 3rd for pet adoptions. If you're interested in working for Raising Cane's, the new location is looking to employ 150 local crew members. Please apply at jobs.raisingcanes.com. This article is entitled Wagner Noel Kicks Off Holiday Season by Morgan Taylor Thomas. With the holiday season rolling in and Thanksgiving 2020 quickly becoming a thing of the past, the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center welcomed a magical Cirque Christmas Sunday and acrobatic violinist Lindsay Sterling on Monday as the festive season's opening acts. An acrobatic performance hosted by comedic magician Lucy Darling, members of the traveling Cirque troupe bent their bodies in unnatural yet impressive shapes, flipped in the air, conquered dangerous balancing acts, juggled an array of items, and produced an intriguing light display, all while cast member vocals belted beautiful vocals. As for Sterling, her admiring fandom, as well as newcomers, filled the performance space as the artist dazzled her way through a holiday-themed musical extravaganza filled with eccentric costumes, songs, leg stretches, dancing, and more. The Wagner Noel holiday schedule continues through the end of December. Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center Schedule. Tickets can be obtained at wagnernoel.com. Where? 1310 North Farm to Market Road, 1788. December 3rd. West Texas Symphony presents Sounds of the Season, Pops and Family Series. December 5th, Little Feet, Waiting for Columbus 45th Anniversary Tour. December 10th to 11th, The Nutcracker, presented by Midland Festival Ballet. December 14th, Mariachi Sol de Mexico de José Hernández, A Mariachi Christmas. December 15th, Nate Bargatze, The Rain Check Tour. December 19th, The Illusionists, Magic of the Holidays. December 20th, Lone Star Brass. December 27th, Peppa Pig Live, Peppa Pig's Adventure. December 30th, Nutcracker, Magical Christmas Ballet. This article is entitled, Crime Stoppers Offer Cash Reward for Grocery Theft Info, by Mercedes Cordero. Midland Crime Stoppers is offering a cash reward for information that leads to the arrest of three suspects who stole meat products from local grocery stores. On October 24th and November 5th, a man and two women went into United Supermarket and HEB and stole meat products valued at around $1,100. They have also stolen items from stores in Odessa. The suspects were driving a black Ford F-150, according to Midland Crime Stoppers. If a person is the first to submit any information on the suspects and it leads to an arrest, he or she will be eligible for a cash reward. Call Midland Crime Stoppers at 694-TIPS or download the Crime Stoppers app, P3 Tips, and submit an anonymous mobile tip. No caller ID is ever used, and those providing information will remain anonymous. Reference MPD case number 22110-7301. This is the oil and gas page. This article is entitled, Lawmakers, Experts, Unsure New Power Market to Work, by Philip Jankowski, Dallas Morning News. Austin. The agency charged with overhauling Texas's electricity market has proposed an untested structure in hopes of retaining the free market system some blame for the blackouts during the 2021 winter storm. Texas legislatures ordered the overhaul of the state's deregulated energy market, which Public Utility Commission Chairman Peter Lake has called crisis-based, because it incentivizes power companies to provide low-cost electricity at the risk of the grid's reliability. The proposed Performance Credit Mechanism, or PCM, as it's known in the acronym-heavy parlance of energy insiders, offers power producers a financial reward to have their plants available during times when Texans are consuming the most energy. The model balances grid resiliency with free market sensibilities, Lake says. With his blessing, the PUC will adopt it or another design before state lawmakers return to Austin for the legislative session that starts January 10th. Lake says the PCM will encourage companies to invest in new natural gas plants, a top priority for lawmakers and energy insiders who are concerned that the ascendancy of cheap renewable energy in Texas will weaken natural gas producers. But some doubt Lake's assertion and are scratching their heads over the model, which he said would take 4 years to implement. This plan is so convoluted and has a long timeline to put in place that it is a setup for failure for everyone, New Braunfels Republican Senator Donna Campbell said at a recent hearing of the Senate Committee on Business and Commerce. Senator Charles Schwertner, a Georgetown Republican who chairs the committee, questioned why the PUC should create a new, untested market mechanism to encourage companies to build new natural gas plants rather than directly providing government money as the incentive. Report didn't recommend design. In a PUC commissioned report released November 10th, a consulting firm E3 evaluated several market designs and did not recommend the PCM, which would cost about $480 million a year more than the current market. The report recommends Texas pursue a structure similar to a capacity market, which pays power producers even when their generators are offline, to subsidize their operations and maintain an adequate supply of electricity for times of peak demand. It is fascinating to see the PUC go against the recommendation of the consultants, Austin-based energy consultant Doug Lewin said. The grid's independent market monitor said the E3 analysis was based on fundamentally flawed assumptions. And other experts questioned the scope of the report, which did not take into account weather conditions during 2021's deadly winter storm. Over the next several weeks, companies from every sector of the electric industry will be submitting input to the PUC. The public and stakeholders have until noon, December 15th, to submit comments on the proposal. I'm looking forward to seeing what the marketplace and people tell us, Lake said. How performance credits would work. If adopted, the PUC would create an additional year-long market for the sale and purchase of so-called performance credits. Power generators would earn them by meeting a commitment they make at the start of the year to produce certain amounts of electricity at certain times. They could then sell the credit to power providers, such as retail electric companies, municipal utilities, and electric cooperatives. The grid operator, the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, would determine how many performance credits power providers must buy according to the percentage of electricity they used. It's incredibly complicated, said Allison Silverstein, an energy consultant who formerly worked with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and the PUC. Silverstein said she doubts the performance credit market would incentivize investment in natural gas facilities because it's unclear whether power plants will even earn them. It's the farthest thing from a predictable revenue stream that I can imagine, she said. The total market value of the performance credit system would be based on a demand curve that has not been set, but likely would be designed to encourage the construction of new natural gas power plants, which Lewin, the energy consultant, said he thinks is possible. To be clear, I don't like it overall, he said of the PCM. But one of the things that it has going for it is that it offers a pretty strong inducement for building new gas plants. At the consumer level, power companies might see the new market as a reason to promote energy conservation. The fewer performance credits ERCOT forces them to buy, the more savings they could pass on to consumers in their electricity bills. But it's not certain that would occur. And the overall cost of implementing the performance credit market would be higher, according to the E3 analysis.
This is Thoris with the Odessa American newspaper for Wednesday, November the 23rd. The headline reads, OC Updates Learning Management System. Odessa College has jumped from Blackboard Learn Original to Blackboard Ultra, which offers a sleeker, cleaner, more modern design. It looks a lot more modern, which is kind of nice, but there's been kind of a steep learning curve with it. Because it's still so new, there are a lot of bugs that are being worked out, said Julie Lyon, senior instructional designer at OC. But Blackboard has been very responsive to us, which has been nice. We went with Blackboard Ultra last summer, so we launched all of our summer courses in Blackboard Ultra, and we are sending the work orders whenever our faculty reported anything that wasn't working as expected. So we sent probably 80 work orders in just a short period of time. It was all serious stuff that needed to be addressed so that we could maintain punctuality, said Lyon. Blackboard is considered a learning management system. It has everything that students need for their courses in one centralized location. Blackboard Ultra was launched in March 2021. It helps students get started on Blackboard. There is tutoring help, their assignments are on it, videos, grades, and information, among many other things. Students can also interact with each other through the system. The system also helps professors tell if any part of students' work has been plagiarized. The company started paying a little more attention to OC, and now they have monthly meetings with the college. There was a team of people that were contracted with Blackboard to help institutions convert their courses to Ultra. And so they decided to put them working with us at no cost to us. The institution was called K-12, but they were working with higher ed institutions and courses. There was nothing that they could do for us. We'd already done it all because this is how Odessa College works. When we're tasked with something, we kind of go in full force, Lyons said. They completely converted from original to ultra within that first 8-week period. We said we gave it 90 days because we had our 2 summer periods and then getting ready for fall during that period. But we went from 0 courses to all of our courses in ultra. So it was a big conversion process and a lot of learning for our faculty, Lyons said. She added that they led up to it with professional learning sessions on what to expect. They had a platform that they could get in and play with courses in a test environment so they could learn how to use it a little bit better. So it wasn't like, boom, it's all new, Lyon said. It still was new for a lot of people. Lyon, who won the Blackboard Exemplary Course Program Award, said that there were some faculty champions who really liked the new learning management system and helped faculty adjust. At the time we switched over to Ultra, Ultra did not provide the support we needed for the course syllabus. There's a legislation that requires that we have the syllabi for all of our credit courses available within 3 clicks of the home page. Ultra did not allow us to do what we were doing with the original Blackboard, Lyons said. They had to bring on a different syllabus management system. So that was all new, and then also our media platform stopped providing support to higher education. They just do K-12 and small business enterprises right now, and not any higher education entities anymore. And so we had all of these massive changes that happened all at once, Lyons said. She said the media platform was kind of like YouTube, featuring mostly videos, but it's only available to Odessa College. Lyon added that they provide regular professional learning sessions in Blackboard Ultra. The various things it does, the tools that are in it, and the new things that are coming on board with Blackboard Ultra. They did a presentation at Anthology Together, a top ed tech event in Florida this year. Anthology is the parent company of Blackboard. They asked us to come and present on what we did to transition in such a quick way. We talked about our process and the process that led up to it, I think is probably the most important, trying to get everybody excited about it and providing a lot of training. But then we also made sure that everybody was aware that it wasn't completely rainbows and unicorns. We did have a lot of issues, Lyons said. Blackboard had never experienced anybody transitioning as quickly as OC did from Blackboard Original to Ultra. It was surprising to them. I don't know how other people do it where it's not quick, but apparently they do it just kind of incrementally, Lyons said. Videos were made of the various issues OC faculty were experiencing, so Blackboard got to see and hear from faculty about their frustrations, and she said she thinks it really helped Blackboard. Lyons said OC isn't the biggest entity Blackboard serves, but Blackboard and Anthology are keeping an eye on OC. Lyons started at OC in 2013, and the college only had about a third of its classes on Blackboard. Now, 100% of all classes have a Blackboard presence, even the face-to-face courses. They now have about 1,500 courses on Blackboard each 16-week term and another 500 that come in on the 8-week terms. So there's a couple thousand courses, Lyons said. Ronald McDonald Family Room offers Home Away from Home. Families who have loved ones staying at Medical Center Hospital have a Home Away from Home, the Ronald McDonald Family Room. Located on the second floor of the hospital, the facility is available through a partnership between MCH and Ronald McDonald House Charities of the Southwest Incorporated. The hospital's website said the room is the 100th in the world. It has 4 bedrooms, washer and dryer, office areas, a kitchen with microwave and oven, snacks and drinks, and living room. The walls have photos of newborns that have been in the neonatal intensive care unit. When they leave, families receive a house-to-home bag with groceries and a gift card. Rosabella Ruiz, Programs Manager for Ronald McDonald House Charities of the Southwest, said they're always in the market for donations of household goods and volunteers. They serve the Southwest chapter of Ronald McDonald House Charities, which includes 68 counties in West Texas, the Panhandle, and southeastern New Mexico. Each room can accommodate two people. Children can visit their parents, but they are not allowed to spend the night in the family room. Ruiz said the reason is it's against hospital policy, and they adhere to all MCH policies. Basically, our purpose is that our houses and family rooms are built on the simple idea that nothing else should matter when a family is focused on the health of their child, Ruiz said. Not where they can afford to stay, where they need to get their next meal, where they need to lay their head. We want to provide everything for a family so that they don't have to be worried or stressed out about those basic needs. And we believe that when a child is hospitalized, the love and support of a family is as powerful as the medicine. All the bedrooms usually stay filled. We do have just a small waiting list. Once a family checks out, we'll check in another family, Ruiz said. Ronald McDonald House Charities is a worldwide organization that is in 90% of the world's leading hospitals, Ruiz said. To get a room, you have to fill out an application. We do have an app. It's called RMHC of the Southwest, and we are on Facebook and all our social media outlets. But if you download our app, we instruct families that they can fill out the application on the Permian Basin tab on the top, Ruiz said. Once they receive that, it is processed and must be approved through a social worker or charge nurse. When approved and a background check is obtained on the family, they are welcome to stay. Ruiz said it doesn't take long for that to go through. Most parents who stay in the Ronald McDonald rooms have children in the neonatal intensive care unit. Pediatrics is located on the fifth floor of the west side of Medical Center Hospital. What happens is because we are at a distance from them, it's difficult for those parents to come and actually stay and leave their child and stay here. But what we do is we go to them, so we serve them by us visiting those parents, and we will take toys up, Ruiz said. Another one of our programs is the Ronald McDonald Hospitality Car. We're about to roll out a brand new one come next year that will not just only serve the pediatrics or families of children, but the whole hospital. We're going to plan to park it out in front, and we will be serving tea, coffee, we'll be serving water and snacks, and be able to provide toys or things like that for children. We will be rolling that out hopefully in the early 2023, Ruiz said. Meanwhile, they have a hospitality cart that they take up to pediatrics. They deliver toys weekly there and visit families that have pediatric patients. The other thing that we have is we have meal donations by local restaurants. Currently, we have McDonald's, of course, who is our corporate sponsor to the Ronald McDonald Organization. They provide Happy Meals and hamburgers every Tuesday to all of our families. We have different local restaurants right now that provide a hot meal once a week. They work with local restaurants to determine what day is convenient for them to provide those meals. As long as we have a hot meal, we're good. We're always looking for great community restaurants who are willing to give a donation to feed these families, Ruiz said. Because the Ronald McDonald room is in the hospital, there is no stove. Our house in Lubbock is a three-story home with 17 bedrooms. Families who go and stay at the Ronald McDonald House have the ability to cook their own meals. However, meals are constantly being brought by the community there in Lubbock, she added. At the MCH family room, the NICU is nearby, so moms can walk down the hallway in the middle of the night. At the same time, we're taking care of those families so that they can get better and being able to get what they need for their babies. It's really a great organization, Ruiz said. 100% of what you give to the family room goes directly back to these families. 80% of our income for the Ronald McDonald House Charities of the Southwest is generated by donations. I'm happy to say that McDonald's donates 2 cents per happy meal. It turns into millions per year, and that's a global figure, Ruiz said. It's a good support for us, she added. They have been in the process of replacing the furniture. They are currently looking into replacing the dining room and bed frames in the bedrooms. We did get a donation last year for new mattresses in all the rooms, but the beds do need to be replaced. just like our homes, so everything eventually needs upgrading, Ruiz said. She noted that MCH Housekeeping takes care of the family room. They are the ones who come and clean up all of our rooms and take care of our family room so that we are up to hospital standards. Medical Center Hospital is the one who takes very good care of us, and they take care of any other needs that we've got, Ruiz said. The hospital auxiliary also has contributed. In 2020, before the pandemic hit, they provided the family room with a Christmas tree. They also have provided a new vacuum cleaner and rugs. They're angels in this hospital. They're amazing, Ruiz said. The auxiliary was a great support. She added that they are always in need of volunteers. If you are under 18 and would like to volunteer, you would need to be accompanied by a guardian, an adult, a parent, to be able to volunteer, Ruiz said. They can also provide scholar hours or other types of volunteer hours that students might need. Anybody over 18 is welcome to just fill out an application. We run a background check. TB tests must be taken through Medical Center Hospital, of course. Orientation through Medical Center and Ronald McDonald are some of the requirements to become a volunteer, she said. They also work with the Odessa College work-study program so students can work for them. They also are open to having University of Texas Permian Basin students. They recently opened a family room on the fourth floor of the Midland Memorial Hospital as well. It does not have bedrooms, only a kitchen and living area. Donations of household goods also are needed, from paper towels to cleaning items, receiving blankets, baby toys, rubber gloves, toiletries, detergent, Dreft for babies, fabric, softener, and dryer sheets, individually packaged snacks, K-cup coffee, creamer, individual sugar packets, and cookie dough. Also copy paper, postage stamps, masking tape, Sharpies, AA batteries, queen-size sheets, and a special request, HEB gift cards. Local news roundup. Bonds total $3 million for Odessa couple. Surety bonds totaling $3 million have been set for a West Odessa couple accused of abusing and strangling the woman's 8-year-old son to death. Megan Lang, 29, and Rodolfo Reyes, 33, were arrested Monday on suspicion of capital murder of a child under 10 and injury to a child. According to an Ector County Sheriff's Office report, Lang called 911 from her home in the 2000 block of North Huntington Avenue on November the 5th to report her son, Arturo Francisco Coca, was unresponsive. Life-saving measures taken by firefighters and Medical Center Hospital personnel were unsuccessful. Lang said Arturo had woken up after defecating and urinating on himself, and after she cleaned him up, he stopped breathing, the report stated. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths said Lang and Reyes, the boy's stepfather, attributed the boy's death to diabetes, but a forensic pathologist ruled the cause of Arturo's death was asphyxiation by manual strangulation with underlying causes of neglect. He determined the boy was malnourished. Griffiths also told the Odessa American the 8-year-old boy weighed only 35 pounds. Although Arturo's obituary said he was a third grader at Burnett Elementary, Ector County Independent School District spokesman Mike Adkins said Tuesday the boy wasn't attended on an ECISD school since the 2021 school year. Woman arrested on child abuse charge. A 23-year-old Odessa woman was arrested Friday after a Gonzales Elementary School nurse and administrators told police they found a 5-year-old covered in bruises. According to an Odessa Police Department report, the child told the school nurse he was in pain, and without being asked, he pointed to bruises on his butt, elbow, and an area on his head near his ear. Officers spotted injuries on the boy's arm, back, and head, and noted in their report those are not areas for reasonable discipline. They also noted a linear mark on the boy's butt. During a forensic interview at Harmony Home, the boy said Jessica del Carmen Ramos Monzo used a rectangular board to spank him when his father wasn't home the night prior. The boy's father told officers he was at work Thursday night and didn't get home until the early morning hours. He further stated that he received a text from Monzo the night before, telling him not to accuse her of hitting his son because he'd been bit by an insect or had a reaction to his shirt. The child's father, who drove the boy to school Friday morning, said he didn't suspect anything after receiving Munzo's text, according to the report. Munzo was arrested on suspicion of injury to a child, a third-degree felony punishable by 2 to 10 years in prison. She was released Saturday after posting a $15,000 surety bond. Man arrested in connection to October shooting. A 23-year-old Presidio man was arrested Friday in connection with an October 30th shooting outside a party. According to an Odessa Police Department report, dispatchers received a 911 call about a fight in the 1600 block of Santa Monica Avenue around 1 a.m. October 30th, and while officers were en route, they learned shots had been fired. When officers arrived, they were told the occupants of a gray Dodge Ram got into a fight with people at a party, left, came back, resumed the fight, and then left again. However, when they left the second time, they opened fire on some vehicles, striking a GMC Sierra 5 times, the report stated. Officers found 5 rifle casings in the road, according to the report. Witnesses identified the people inside the Dodge, including 2 of the alleged shooters, the report stated. Records show one of the suspects, Eric Montoya, owns a gray Dodge Ram, and a City of Odessa camera captured his truck in Odessa just hours before the shooting, according to the report. A witness picked Montoya out of a photo lineup on November the 8th and said he fired shots that night, according to the report. Montoya told investigators on November the 10th he fired a rifle into the ground that night, and another individual fired the same rifle after he did, the report stated. The other individual corroborated his story, but also said he only shot at the ground, too. Montoya was arrested on suspicion of deadly contact, a third-degree felony punishable by 2 to 10 years in prison. He was released from the Ector County Jail Saturday after posting a $15,000 surety bond. The name of the other individual, a 21-year-old man, was redacted from the report as he's not yet been arrested. Odessan accused of possession. Driving without his headlights, landed an Odessa man in the Ector County Jail Friday night on drug charges. According to an Odessa Police Department report, an officer pulled over a Hyundai Elantra in the 1200 block of West University Boulevard around 9 p.m. Friday because the driver, Ivan Estrada, 20, hadn't turned on his headlights. While speaking with Estrada, the officer noted the car smelled like marijuana, and Estrada admitted he had marijuana and cocaine inside the car, the report stated. During a subsequent search, the officer found 5.73 grams of marijuana in a fast food bag and 9.73 grams of cocaine in the driver's side pocket door, the report stated. He also found a digital scale in the center console and new individual baggies in Estrada's boot. Estrada was arrested on suspicion of possession of a controlled substance, 4 to 200 grams, a second-degree felony punishable by 2 to 20 years in prison, and possession of marijuana. He was also cited for not having a driver's license and driving without headlights. Estrada was released from the Ector County Jail Saturday after posting surety bonds totaling $25,500. MC PTK Honor Society donates to Crisis Center of West Texas. Each year, the Midland College Phi Theta Kappa Honor Society selects a service project that will benefit a group in Midland, a press release detailed. This year, the students decided to assist domestic violence victims who are currently seeking assistance from the Crisis Center of West Texas. On November the 18th, Midland College student and PTK Vice President Maria Gonzalez and Midland College Government Professor and Honors Program Director Dr. Terry Gilmore delivered 30 bags of personal care items and $767 to the center. When we asked our fellow students and Midland College employees for donations, The response was overwhelming, Gonzalez stated in the press release. Individuals, both students and employees, contributed. A dual-credit English class taught by Felicia Stovall joined us by making this their class project, and the Student Nurses Association contributed with many items as well. People dropped off the items in Dr. Gilmore's office and or donated money. In addition to the 30 bags of items, we also donated $767 for the Crisis Center clients. Gonzalez stated that during PTK's service project research, members discovered that the Crisis Center of West Texas currently houses 47 survivors of domestic violence and sexual abuse, 19 adults and 28 children. They also maintain a 24-hour hotline, free counseling, case management, and legal advocacy. In 2021, there were 204 Texans killed by their intimate partners, and five of those were in the Permian Basin, Gonzalez stated in the press release. People our age, 14 to 25, are at the highest risk for interpersonal violence. Texas medical marijuana program is a buzzkill. The point? Program falls far short of potential to help Texans. Nearly 8 years after Texas first legalized medical marijuana, the state-run program remains plagued by excessive restrictions and limited distribution of weak cannabis that some patients say does little to alleviate their pain. We urge the 88th Texas legislature to address these flaws to help more Texans get relief from medical conditions like cancer and post-traumatic stress disorder. The state's compassionate use registry for medical marijuana listed 36,651 Texans as of September, but less than half, 16,051, had filled a cannabis prescription in the last 6 months, according to reporting by the American statesman Bob Schleckler. That's because the restrictive program and the weak product it allows aren't robust enough to help many Texans get medically prescribed relief from their pain and health conditions. Experts told our editorial board that more Texans would take advantage of medical marijuana if lawmakers would raise or eliminate the program's low cap on THC, the psychoactive ingredient in marijuana. Currently, the maximum amount of THC allowed in Texas medical marijuana is 1% by weight, up from just 0.5% in the original version of the law enacted in 2015. Most medical marijuana sold in other states contains at least 10% THC. Pot sold on the black market or in states where recreational marijuana is legal routinely contains 20 to 30% THC or more. Efforts to raise the THC cap for medical marijuana in Texas to a still relatively low 5% during the 87th legislature failed. Susan Hayes, a cannabis attorney and lobbyist from West Texas, who ran unsuccessfully for state agricultural commissioner this year, told our editorial board that medical cannabis in Texas is just glorified hemp, which has 0.3% THC or less. Some Texans are buying more potent marijuana illegally or traveling to adjacent states such as Colorado and New Mexico to buy stronger pot available for legal, medical, and recreational use. The state should allow for at least a modest expansion of distribution. Just three medical marijuana providers, all based in Austin, are now licensed, dramatically increasing or eliminating altogether the list of ailments that Texas doctors can treat with cannabis also would help spur interest in the program. Currently, only 9 medical conditions, including cancer and post-traumatic stress disorder, are on the list. If a medical doctor and a patient believe that the medical cannabis is in their best interest, that should be all they need to qualify, Senator Jose Menendez, a San Antonio Democrat, told us. Menendez has carried bills to expand the state's medical marijuana program with little success each legislative season since 2017, and he told us he plans to do it again in 2023. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, who controls the Senate agenda, has thwarted significant expansion of the state's medical marijuana program. Patrick should reconsider his rigid stance, considering that 72% of all Texans support legalized medical marijuana, and because it has proven in some cases a more cost-effective and safer pain relief substitute for highly addictive opioids. Unfortunately, many Texans have decided to forego that relief because the Texas program doesn't work for them. We go through the hassle of being enrolled and pay a lot of money when there are too few providers. There's no price competition, and it's difficult to get, said Hayes. The Texas State Legislature, Patrick, and Governor Greg Abbott should seriously consider, in the upcoming legislative season, medical marijuana and the potential to help many more Texans, but the state needs to loosen up and give the program a chance to succeed. Thanksgiving travel rush is back with some new habits. The Thanksgiving travel rush was back on this year as people caught planes in numbers not seen in years, setting aside inflation concerns to reunite with loved ones and enjoy some normalcy after two holiday seasons marked by COVID-19 restrictions. Changing habits around work and play, however, might spread out the crowds and reduce the usual amount of holiday travel stress. Experts say many people will start holiday trips early or return home later than normal because they will spend a few days working remotely, or at least tell the boss they're working remotely. The busiest travel days during Thanksgiving week are usually Tuesday, Wednesday, and the Sunday after the holiday. This year, the Federal Aviation Administration expects Tuesday to be the busiest travel day with roughly 48,000 scheduled flights. Chris Williams of Raleigh, North Carolina, flew Tuesday morning with his wife and two kids to Atlanta, Georgia, to spend the holiday with extended family. "Of course, it's a stressful and expensive time to fly," said Williams, 44, who works in finance. "But after a couple years of not getting to spend Thanksgiving with our extended family, I'd say we're feeling thankful that the world's gotten to a safe enough place where we can be with loved ones again." Texas Game Warden Drone Program Yields Positive Outcomes. Three recent incidents requiring game warden drone support and successful coordination with local law enforcement led to an arrest in East Texas and two rescues of lost individuals in the Hill Country. On the night of November the 3rd, Texas Game Warden Michael Humbert responded to an Earth County Sheriff's Office request for assistance. An elderly man had gone missing in Dublin, Texas. As the only law enforcement officer equipped with a thermal drone in the county, his services were necessary. "The setting sun prevented us from locating him through usual means," Humbert said. "The thermal drone picks up body heat, which is necessary to locate someone at night. With a cold creeping in, it was imperative to find him quickly." Using cell phone records, the sheriff's office determined a general location for the individual, and Humbert mapped out a search area. Working out of a control station attached to his vehicle, he located the individual through a thermal scan and led deputies to the location. Colorado club shooting survivor, "I want to be resilient." One man who has frequented Club Q for decades was just opening up a tab at the bar when he was shot in the back. Another man was about to leave the club with his group when he heard a pop, pop, pop and took a bullet to his arm, then watched his boyfriend and sister fall to the floor. They are among the 17 people wounded by gunfire Saturday when a 22-year-old man went on a shooting rampage at Club Q, a well-known club for the community of LGBTQ in Colorado Springs, Colorado. On Tuesday, they shared the horror of seeing their loved ones shot down in front of them, as well as the hope they felt as people helped each other amid the crisis. Ed Sanders, 63, said he had been waiting in line at the bar, had made his way up to the front and given the bartender his credit card when he was hit in the back, right between the shoulder blades. Surprised, he turned back to look at the gunman, only to be hit again in the thigh as another volley of shots were fired. "I fell, and everybody fell," Sanders said in video statements released Tuesday by UC Health Memorial Hospital Central. It was very traumatic. I shielded another woman with my coat. There was a lot of chaos. James Slaw said he, his boyfriend, and his sister were getting ready to leave the club when all of a sudden we just heard pop, pop, pop. As I turned, I took a bullet in my arm from the back. Slaw, who spoke to the Associated Press from his hospital bed, said he watched others around him fall, including his boyfriend, who was shot in the leg, and his sister, who had bullet wounds in 13 places. He quickly called the police, heard several more shots, then nothing. The scariest part of the shooting, he said, was not knowing whether the gunman would fire again. 5 people were killed in the shooting, which stopped after the gunman was disarmed by patrons. The motive for the attack is still being investigated, and the man has not been formally charged. Police say he was armed with multiple firearms, including an AR-15-style semi-automatic rifle, and the possible hate crimes are being considered. I want to be resilient. I'm a survivor, Sanders said. I'm not going to be taken out by some sick person. Sanders has been a patron of Club Q for 20 years and even went to the club's opening night decades ago. He wore a hospital gown and had an oxygen tube in his nose in the video recorded by the hospital. He said that after the 2016 Pulse gay nightclub shooting in Florida, which killed 49 people, Sanders thought about what he would do if something similar happened at Club Q, but he never dreamed it would become reality. I'm smiling now because I am happy to be alive, Sanders said. I dodged a major event in my life and came through it, and that's part of who I am as a survivor. Sanders knew many of the victims, including the door lady and 2 bartenders who died. Sanders said that after the shooting, people who weren't hit were helping each other, just like a family would do. Alcohol and diabetes. United Supermarkets Lifestyle Desk. The holidays are filled with fun get-togethers and parties. You're constantly going out and spending time with people, whether that be in the office or with friends, and usually alcohol is present. If you have diabetes, this can be quite a challenge to navigate through. Alcohol isn't beneficial, especially to those with health conditions. Specifically, with diabetes, the blood sugar levels can quickly become unregulated, even for those who eat well-balanced frequently. We aren't just talking about a couple of glasses of wine. This conversation is targeted at heavy drinking, which can occur during the holiday season. Alcohol consumption in diabetics has also been found to worsen some of the health conditions that are related to the disease, like nerve damage and eye disease. Completely steering away from alcoholic beverages altogether wouldn't be realistic during this time of year, so we're here to suggest some tips that might help you continue to enjoy the parties while keeping your well-being in mind. Be mindful of what drink you choose. While the candy cane flavored drink might be a seasonal hit and your go-to menu item, keep in mind that it could be filled with high amounts of sugar. Try limiting these types of beverages and sipping on them a little longer to enjoy the flavor profile. If you want to continue your night with cocktails, opt for no or low-calorie juices, sodas, and sweeteners. Another option you might add in is opting for light beer, as they typically have less calories and carbs compared to regular beer. Most drinks will not have a nutrition label on them because they aren't mandatory, but you can find resources on the internet to find the content of the drink to help you with your choice. Don't drink on an empty stomach. A major concern to have with alcohol is hyperglycemia, more specifically when you drink without eating first. The mixture of medications can have a reaction with the alcohol, causing blood sugar levels to drop to a dangerous level, even if a substantial snack or meal isn't provided at the function. Then try sipping on your drink to be mindful of your alcohol intake. The symptoms of hypoglycemia and being intoxicated are quite similar: drowsiness, difficulty walking, and confusion. Stay safe and have fun. Enjoy yourself this holiday season and have fun at those parties. It's just important to keep these things in mind to make sure your health and safety is a priority. Some key takeaways are to limit drinking high sugary drinks. Don't drink on an empty stomach and know the signs of dangerous reactions that could be threatening. Overall, we hope you make amazing memories and enjoy yourself this holiday season. Like we mentioned earlier, try not to drink on an empty stomach. We suggest having something nutritiously dense and well-rounded with fats, carbs, and proteins. Obituaries and death notices. Mona Faye Greeson, age 86, passed from this life Friday, November the 18th. Ronald D., known as R.D. Hawley, age 86, passed away on Friday, November the 18th. James Denver Smith, 72-year-old resident of Canyon, Texas, will hold funeral services on Tuesday, November the 22nd. Mary Keithley Davidson, 94, of Odessa, died Friday, November the 18th. Judy Darlin, known as Judy Booty Isaacs, 47, of Odessa, died Thursday, November the 17th. James Edward Jim McCown, 78, of Odessa, died Wednesday, November the 16th. Terry Ann Tamontes, 54, died Sunday, November the 13th. Pauline Jean Van Dyke, age 62, of Odessa, died Thursday, November the 17th.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.